This episode of the Ortho Bullets podcast will be a question session reviewing multiple choice questions related to acetabular fractures, which is one of the topics that we covered this past week on the podcast. So let's get right into it. The first question reads, a 36-year-old male presents to the emergency room as a pedestrian struck. He is hemodynamically stable but sustained a displaced transverse fracture of the right acetabulum. He undergoes an uncomplicated open reduction and internal fixation, and anatomic reduction is achieved. Preoperative imaging and surgical visualization demonstrated no significant damage to the articular surface of the femoral head. The expected survivorship of his native hip at 20 years is 1, 10 to 25%, 2, 25 to 40%, 3, 40 to 60%, 4, 60 to 75%, and 5, greater than 75%. So the expected 20-year survivorship of the native hip in all comers with these fractures is approximately 80%. This patient has none of the known risk factors associated with poor survival, therefore the survivorship of his hip is expected to be greater than 75%, making 5 greater than 75% the correct answer to this question. Survival of the native hip following acetabular fracture is dependent upon a multitude of factors, including patient age, fracture pattern, initial fracture displacement, quality of reduction, and injury to the femoral head. Liebergall et al. Evaluated the 2-year outcomes for 53 patients with operatively fixed acetabular fractures. They found that 77.4% of these patients were treated successfully as defined by a postoperative Harris hip score of greater than 80 points. Statistical analysis found that positive predictors of successful outcomes included patient age less than 40 years old, simple fracture patterns from the Judae and Luternal classification, and the presence of an undamaged femoral head. Damage to the femoral head seen on preoperative imaging or during surgery was predictive of failure with a p-value of less than 0.001. Tannist et al. Evaluated 810 patients who underwent ORIF of acetabular fractures with 2 to 20-year follow-up. Cumulative survivorship of the hip at 20 years after fracture fixation was 79%. Factors associated with failure were non-anatomic fracture reduction, age greater than 40 years, an anterior hip dislocation, incongruence of the weight-bearing acetabular dome, involvement of the posterior wall, acetabular articular impaction, a femoral head cartilage lesion, initial displacement of the articular surface greater than 20 millimeters, and use of the extended iliofemoral surgical approach. Moving on to the next question. Which of the following activities produces greater hip joint contact pressures than full weight-bearing during normal gait? And the choices are 1, performing isometric hip exercises, 2, getting on a bedpan, 3, ambulating with a cane, 4, rising from a chair using the affected leg, and 5, toe-touch weight-bearing with passive hip abduction. So rising from a seated position on a chair on the affected leg has been shown to create the highest contact pressure within the hip, even higher than full weight-bearing during walking. So the correct answer to this question is 4, rising from a chair using the affected leg. Limiting activities that create high contact pressures is important in situations such as after internal fixation of an acetabular fracture. Full weight bearing during a normal gait cycle is often considered too much contact pressure and considered a risk for early failure of fixation. During the postoperative period, weight bearing and activities are limited to prevent this. It has been shown that the highest contact pressures, even higher than normal walking, are seen when rising from a chair on the affected leg. Brand et al. Analyzed joint reactive forces in patients walking with and without a cane. Compared to age-matched controls, they estimate that using a cane decreases the contact pressure in the hip to about 60% of normal. Hodge et al. Looked at data from an implanted hip prosthesis with pressure sensors. They found that some activities common to the early rehabilitative period, such as using a bedpan and performing isometric exercises about the hip, can create pressure approaching those of normal walking. The highest pressures recorded were when rising from a chair. Moving on to the next question. Prescribing touch weight bearing, defined as 10 to 15 kilograms, would be most appropriate in the following scenario. And the choices are 1, acute grade 2 anterior talofibular ligament ankle sprain, 2, partial lateral meniscectomy for incomplete radial tear, 3, open reduction internal fixation for comminuted calcaneus fracture, 4, cemented hemiarthroplasty for displaced femoral neck fracture, and 5, open reduction internal fixation for transtectal transverse posterior wall fracture. So touch weight-bearing regimens, defined as 10 to 15 kilograms, have shown to minimize joint reaction forces across the hip. This weight-bearing restriction should be considered in patients who have undergone open reduction internal fixation of transtectal transverse posterior wall fractures. So the correct answer to this question is 5, open reduction internal fixation for transtectal transverse posterior wall fractures. The definition of touch weight-bearing, also known as touchdown weight-bearing, is ill-defined in the literature. Published data suggests touch weight-bearing to be 10 to 15 kilograms of load applied to the ground by the affected limb or less than 20% of body weight. In contrast, partial weight-bearing is reported as 20 to 25 kilograms or 30% to 50% of body weight. Joint reaction forces across the hip have been shown to be lowest with touch weight-bearing. In this scenario, the foot should be flat against the ground, so the flexor and extensor musculature that cross the hip are relaxed. With non-weight-bearing restrictions, the musculature across the hip will be contracted, which increases contact pressures and joint reaction forces. Rubin et al. Looked at the validity of touch weight-bearing and partial weight-bearing regimens. They found that most patients overload the limb up to 50% more than the targeted weight prescribed. Lewis et al. Showed that maintaining non-weight-bearing position of the involved leg produces increased compressive forces across the hip joint due to activation of the hip flexors compared to restricted weight-bearing. Moving on to the next question. The posterior wall of the acetabulum is best visualized on which of the following radiographic views? And the choices are 1, inlet pelvis, 2, outlet pelvis, 3, anteroposterior pelvis, 4, obturator oblique pelvis, and 5, iliac oblique pelvis. So the posterior wall is best visualized on the obturator oblique pelvic view. So the correct answer is 4, obturator oblique pelvis. The obturator oblique and iliac oblique views make up the Joudet views that are used to evaluate acetabular fractures along with a standard AP pelvis radiograph. The obturator oblique pelvic view is best to view the anterior column and posterior wall in detail. The iliac oblique shows the profile of the involved iliac wing, the posterior column, and the anterior wall. Letourneau reviewed his classification and treatment protocols based on his 22 years of experience at that time. He noted that perfect anatomical reduction of the acetabulum led to the best outcomes. Patel et al. Reviewed the Letourneau classification, and they found moderate to high inter- and intra-observer reliability with this classification system. The presence of articular displacement, marginal impaction, incongruity, intra-articular fragments, and osteochondral injuries to the femoral head were found to have less reliability, both intra- and inter-observer. Moving on to the next question. Which of the following is associated with increased fetal morbidity and mortality in acetabular fractures during pregnancy? And the choices are 1, fetal position, 2, surgical approach, 3, mechanism of injury, 4, fracture classification, and 5, trimester of pregnancy. So fixation of pelvic and acetabular fractures in pregnancy is not contraindicated. However, both maternal and fetal morbidity and mortality is increased in this patient subset. Factors shown to be associated with increased fetal mortality include injury severity, mechanism of injury, and maternal hemorrhage. Surgical approach, fracture classification, fetal position, and the trimester of pregnancy have not been shown to affect fetal morbidity or mortality. So the correct answer to this question is 3, mechanism of injury. Moving on to the next question. An elderly woman with osteoporosis falls from a standing height, sustaining a low-energy fracture of the acetabulum. What structures are most likely fractured? And the choices are 1, posterior column and posterior wall, 2, anterior column and medial wall, 3, anterior column, posterior column, and ischium, that is otherwise known as a T-type fracture, 4, anterior column and posterior column, otherwise known as a transverse fracture, and 5, anterior column and posterior wall, otherwise known as a transverse/posterior wall fracture. So epidemiologic studies suggest that 4,000 acetabular fractures occur in elderly patients each year in the United States. This accordingly may become the most common age group to present with this fracture. In elderly patients with considerable osteoporosis, a typical fracture pattern may present with intrapelvic dislocation of the femoral head with compromise to the anterior column and the medial wall. The resulting fractures are often complex fracture patterns with extensive comminution and displacement. These may present as atypical fracture patterns not always conforming to classic injury patterns described by Joudet and associates. This fracture pattern, seen commonly in geriatric patients, results from low-energy falls with force directly applied to the greater trochanter. Fractures involving the posterior column and or wall and transverse fracture patterns involving both the anterior and posterior columns occur infrequently in this age group. They are, however, more commonly encountered in younger age groups as a result of higher energy trauma. But the correct answer to this question, asking what structures are most likely fractured in an elderly woman with osteoporosis that falls from a standing height, the answer is 2, anterior column and medial wall. Moving on to the next question. A 35-year-old male suffers an anterior column acetabular fracture during a motor vehicle collision and subsequently undergoes percutaneous acetabular fixation. Intraoperatively, fluoroscopy is positioned to obtain an obturator oblique inlet view while placing a supraacetabular screw. Which of the following screw relationships is best evaluated with this view? And the choices are 1. Intraarticular penetration of the screw, 2. Position of the screw cephalad to the sciatic notch, 3. Screw starting point at the anterior inferior iliac spine, 4. Screw starting point at the gluteal pillar, and 5. Screw position between the inner and outer tables of the ilium. So the obturator oblique inlet view best demonstrates the position of a supraacetabular screw or pin relative to the tables of the ilium. So the correct answer to this question is 5, screw position between the inner and outer tables of the ilium. Starr et al. Review their initial results and technique of closed or limited open reduction and percutaneous fixation of acetabular fractures. They define 2 groups of patients who may benefit from this technique. Elderly patients with multiple comorbidities to facilitate early mobilization and restore hip morphology, and young patients with elementary fracture patterns and multiple associated injuries. Starr et al. Described their operative technique and outcomes for a case series of 3 patients using percutaneous acetabular fixation to augment open reduction of acetabular fractures. The authors state that for placement of an anterior column ramus screw, an iliac oblique inlet, not an obturator oblique inlet, will ensure that the screw is within the medullary canal of the ramus and does not exit anterior or posterior. Gardner and Nork describe a technique for placement of a large femoral distractor in the supraacetabular region to compress displaced posterior pelvic ring injuries. They note that the obturator oblique inlet view is necessary to view the entire length of the pin as well as to ensure that the pin remains in bone. Moving on to the next question. A 32-year-old male sustains a posterior wall acetabulum fracture as a result of a high-speed motor vehicle collision. Improved patient-reported outcomes after surgical treatment are associated with which of the following variables? And the choices are 1. Increased age, 2. Increased hip flexion extension arc, 3. Immediate weight bearing, 4. Increased hip muscle strength, and 5. Decreased stride length. So patient functional outcomes after acetabular fractures have been shown to be related to postoperative hip strength regardless of surgical approach. So the correct answer to this question is 4. Increased hip muscle strength. The reference by Borelli et al. Evaluated muscle strength and outcomes after acetabular surgery by an anterior approach. They report that hip extension strength was affected least in 6% of patients, whereas abduction, adduction, and flexion strength was affected to a greater degree. They note that hip muscle strength after operative treatment of a displaced acetabular fracture directly influences patient outcome. The reference by Engsberg et al. Is a review of patients that underwent ORIF of acetabular fractures through anterior or posterior approaches. They report that maximizing hip muscle strength may improve gait, and improvement in hip muscle strength and gait is likely to improve functional outcome. Worsening functional outcomes were correlated with decreased gait kinematics and stride length. Moving on to the next question. When placing a percutaneous retrograde pubic ramus screw for fixation of an acetabular fracture, which of the following radiographic views can best ensure that the screw does not exit the posterior aspect of the superior pubic ramus? And the choices are 1. AP pelvis, 2. Outlet obturator oblique view, 3. Inlet iliac oblique view, 4. Iliac oblique view, and 5. Obturator oblique view. So as reviewed in the referenced article by Starr et al., when placing a retrograde pubic rami screw, the pelvic inlet iliac oblique view will best determine the anteroposterior placement of the screw in the pubic ramus. So the correct answer to this question is 3, inlet iliac oblique view. To ensure placement outside of the joint, the outlet obturator oblique is best, but all other views should be incorporated into determination of the position of fixation as the corridor for the screw placement is quite narrow. Moving on to the next question. A 35-year-old male sustains a posterior column, posterior wall acetabular fracture. Which of the following is the preferred approach for open treatment of this injury? And the choices are 1, modified Stapa approach, 2, extended iliofemoral approach, 3, Coker-Langenbach approach, 4, ilioinguinal approach, and 5, combined anterior and posterior approach. So operative treatment is indicated for most displaced acetabular fractures to allow early ambulatory function and to decrease the chance of post-traumatic arthritis. Among the various surgical approaches, the Coker-Langenbach allows direct exposure of both the posterior column and posterior wall. Indications for using this exposure include posterior wall fractures, posterior column fractures, combined posterior wall slash posterior column fractures, and simple transverse fractures. So again, the correct answer to this question is 3, Coker-Langenbach approach. Moving on to the next question. A CT scan has been shown to be indicated for evaluation of all of the following aspects of acetabular fractures except, and the choices are 1, determination of surgical planning, 2, intra-articular loose bodies, 3, marginal impaction, 4, fracture piece size and position, and 5, determination of pre-existing degenerative changes. So CT scanning is indicated in acetabular fractures for determination of surgical approach and techniques, evaluation of marginal impaction, and presence of intra-articular loose bodies, especially after hip dislocation, and evaluation of fracture piece sizes and relative positions. Kellum et al. Reviewed their initial experience with CT scanning and acetabular fractures and noted a 25% change in surgical planning when CT was utilized versus plain radiographs. They also noted the ability to detect marginal impaction and fracture size slash position was improved with CT. So the correct answer to this question is 5, determination of pre-existing degenerative changes is not indicated for a CT scan, so this is an incorrect statement in this except question. Moving on to the next question. An acetabular fracture with all segments of the articular surface detached from the intact posterior ilium is defined as what fracture pattern? And the choices are 1, transverse, 2, both column, 3, anterior column posterior hemitransverse, 4, posterior column with posterior wall, and 5, anterior column with anterior wall. So both column acetabular fracture is defined as an acetabular fracture with no articular surface in continuity with the remaining posterior ilium and therefore axial skeleton. So the correct answer to this question is 2, both column. The spur sign is a radiological sign seen with these fractures and is the postero-inferior aspect of the intact posterior ilium. Moving on to the next question. The pelvic spur sign on plain radiography is indicative of which of the following injuries? And the choices are 1, transtectal transverse acetabular fracture, 2, vertical shear pelvic ring injury, 3, displaced H-type sacral fracture, 4, both column acetabular fracture, and 5, anterior-posterior type 3 pelvic ring injury. So the pelvic spur sign is indicative of a both column acetabular fracture. It is best seen on an AP or obturator oblique X-ray. The spur is the intact portion of the ilium still attached to the axial skeleton and seen posterior superior to the displaced acetabulum. So the correct answer to this question asking about the pelvic spur sign is 4. It represents a both column acetabular fracture. Moving on to the next question. During the ilioinguinal approach to the pelvis, the corona mortis artery must be identified and ligated if present. The corona mortis artery joins the external iliac artery with which other major artery? And the choices are 1, pudendal, 2, deep iliac circumflex, 3, hypogastric, 4, obturator, and 5, testicular. So the corona mortis artery, translated as the crown of death artery, is a vascular variant that joins the external iliac and the obturator artery as it crosses the superior pubic ramus. Tornetta et al. Did a study where 50 cadaver halves were dissected to determine the occurrence and location of the corona mortis. Anastomosis between the obturator and external iliac systems occurred in 84% of the specimens. 34% had an arterial connection, 70% had a venous connection, and 20% had both. The distance from the symphysis to the anastomotic vessels averaged 6.2 centimeters. The range is between 3 to 9 centimeters. The corona mortis can be injured in superior ramus fractures and iatrogenically while plating pelvic ring injuries using the ilioinguinal approach. So the correct answer to this question is 4, the obturator artery joins up with the external iliac artery to form the corona mortis. Moving on to the next question. A patient is seen in the emergency department after a motor vehicle accident. He reports right hip pain and chest pain. Initial hypotension has responded to a fluid bolus. Radiographs reveal a posterior hip dislocation with a small posterior acetabular wall fracture. You were called at home and informed of the findings. What is the next most appropriate step in management? And the choices are 1. Obtain a CT scan to assess the injury. 2. Obtain an MRI scan to assess for osteonecrosis. 3. Reduce the hip and evaluate hip stability. 4. Perform open reduction of the hip in the operating room. And 5. Ask the emergency room physician to transfer the patient to a higher level trauma center. So an immediate reduction of the hip is required in this patient. Transfer to a trauma center may be indicated to treat a possible chest injury and the acetabular fracture. Reduction of the hip dislocation should be considered emergent and should be performed prior to transfer. Additional diagnostic studies prior to hip reduction are not necessary. Most hip dislocations can be reduced closed, and this is the preferred management. So the correct answer to this question is 3, reduce the hip and evaluate hip stability. Moving on to the next question. During an ilioinguinal approach for fixation of the anterior pelvic ring, brisk bleeding is encountered as the dissection is extended along the superior pubic ramus approximately 5 centimeters from the midline. What structure has most likely been injured? And the choices are 1, a branch of the femoral artery, 2, an anastomosis between the external iliac artery and obturator artery, 3, an anastomosis between the external iliac and femoral artery, 4, internal iliac artery, and 5, external iliac artery. So the corona mortis, or quote, crown of death, is a common anatomic variant that consists of an anastomosis between the obturator and the external iliac or inferior epigastric arteries or veins. Its reported incidence is over 80%. It's located behind the superior pubic ramus at a variable distance from the symphysis pubis, anywhere from 3 centimeters to 9 centimeters. It's at risk during surgical approaches to the anterior pelvic ring. If accidentally cut, the vessel can retract, making control of hemorrhage difficult. But the correct answer to this question is 2, an anastomosis between the external iliac artery and obturator artery defines the corona mortis, which is at increased risk of injury during an ilioinguinal approach. Moving on to the next question. Which statement is true with respect to acetabular fracture surgery as the time between injury and surgery increases? And the choices are 1, decreased chance of anatomic fracture reduction, 2, decreased risk of heterotopic ossification, 3, decreased rate of neurologic injury, 4, decreased rate of infection, and 5, decreased rate of multi-organ failure. So Madhu et al. Showed time to surgery was a significant predictor of radiological and functional outcome for both elementary and associated displaced fractures of the acetabulum. Both anatomic reduction and functional outcome significantly worsened as time to surgery increased. It was found anatomic reduction was more likely when surgery was within 15 days for elementary fractures and 5 days for associated. So the correct answer to this question is 1, decreased chance of anatomic fracture reduction when the time between injury and acetabular surgery increases. Moving on to the next question. Which of the following associated type acetabular fracture patterns is defined based on the fact that all articular segments are detached from the intact portion of the ilium, which remains attached to the sacrum through the sacroiliac joint? And the choices are 1, posterior wall / posterior column, 2, transverse, 3, T-type, 4, anterior column / posterior hemitransverse, and 5, both columns. So there are 5 simple and 5 associated fracture types according to the classification system created by Jude and Letourneau. The key feature which distinguishes both column fractures from other associated types is that all articular segments are detached from the intact portion of the ilium, which remains attached to the sacrum through the SI joint. Although the transverse plus posterior wall, T-shaped, and anterior plus posterior hemitransverse fractures all show involvement of the anterior and posterior columns, they are not, quote, both columns because a portion of the articular surface remains in its normal position, attached to the intact ilium. The intact ilium is responsible for the spur sign, noted most prominently on the obturator oblique radiograph. But the correct answer to this question is 5, both columns. Moving on to the next question. All of the following have been shown to negatively affect clinical outcomes in treating displaced acetabular fractures except, and the choices are 1, increased age, 2, intraoperative complications, 3, ipsilateral femoral head injury, 4, involvement of both columns, and 5, non-anatomic fracture reduction. So negative outcome factors have been shown to include increasing patient age, time from injury to surgery of greater than 3 weeks, intraoperative complications, femoral head, bone, or cartilage injury, and fracture reduction greater than 1 to 2 millimeters from anatomic. Choice of surgical approach has not been shown to affect patient outcomes. The study by Mata evaluated outcomes of displaced acetabular fractures. The overall clinical result was excellent for 104 hips, or 40% of the patients studied, good for 95, or 36% of the patients studied, and fair for 21, or 8% of the patients studied, and poor for 42, or 16% of the patients studied. The clinical result was related closely to the radiographic result. These findings indicate that in many patients who have a complex acetabular fracture, the hip joint can be preserved and post-traumatic osteoarthrosis can be avoided if an anatomical reduction is achieved. So the correct answer to this question, asking about negative clinical outcomes in treating displaced acetabular fractures, the answer is 4, involvement of both columns, which does not negatively affect clinical outcomes, making it the correct answer in this except question. Moving on to the next question. A 25-year-old patient presents with a posterior wall / posterior column acetabular fracture. She's scheduled for open reduction internal fixation through a posterior approach. What position of the leg exerts the least amount of intraneural pressure on the sciatic nerve? And the choices are 1, hip flexion, knee extension, 2, hip extension, knee extension, 3, hip flexion and knee flexion, 4, hip extension and knee flexion, and 5, the pressure does not vary based on position. So in the study by Borelli et al., researchers measured tissue fluid pressure within the sciatic nerve in cadaveric specimens using a pressure transducer. The hip and knee were taken through a combination of ranges and found that the clinically relevant increase in pressure happened with the hip flexed at 90 degrees and the knee fully extended. They concluded that increased intraneural pressure was related to excursion of the nerve as linear distance between the greater sciatic notch and the distal leg increase. Hence, according to the question stem, to avoid traction injury, the reverse position should be implemented, which is hip extension and knee flexion, making 4, hip extension and knee flexion, the correct answer to this question. And the final question for this review session, when viewing pelvic injury radiographs, which of the following describes the findings diagnostic of an isolated transverse acetabular fracture? And the choices are 1, fracture line crossing the acetabulum with disruption of the iliopectineal and ilioischial lines, 2, disruption of the iliopectineal and ilioischial lines with extension into the iliac wing and obturator ring, 3, disruption of the iliopectineal and ilioischial lines with extension into the obturator ring, 4, isolated disruption of the iliopectineal line with an intact ilioischial line, and 5, isolated disruption of the ilioischial line with an intact iliopectineal line. So transverse acetabular fractures separate the innominate bone into 2 fragments, the superior iliac and the inferior ischiopubic, by a single fracture line that crosses the acetabulum horizontally. The iliopectineal and ilioischial lines are disrupted on the AP pelvis radiograph. Axial CT scan of this fracture pattern at the level of the dome will show a vertical anterior to posterior fracture line. So the correct answer to this question is 1, fracture line crossing the acetabulum with disruption of the iliopectineal and ilioischial lines. Answer choice 2, which says disruption of the iliopectineal and ilioischial lines with extension into the iliac wing and obturator ring, is describing a both column injury or anterior column posterior hemitransverse. And answer choice 3, disruption of the iliopectineal and ilioischial lines with extension into the obturator ring, describes a T-type fracture pattern. Answer choice 4, which says isolated disruption of the iliopectineal line with an intact ilioischial line, and answer choice 5, which says isolated disruption of the ilioischial line with an intact iliopectineal line, describe an anterior column and posterior column injury respectively. That's all for this question review session about acetabular fractures. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on iTunes. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.